Happy New Year 2022, podcast family. This is Stacey Clardy, your podcast editor. It's the beginning of a new year, so I just wanted to take a couple minutes and look back with you and also update you on all things neurology podcasts coming up. During this year, in the fall, believe it or not, the neurology podcast will turn 15 years old. A lot has changed from those original episodes with Ted Burns and Sandy Moriarty behind the scenes. Many things have stayed constant too, thankfully, including Ted continuing to play a major role. We've also enjoyed a lot of support for all the audio innovations over the years from our journal editors, back to John Noseworthy through Bob Gross and now Jose Marino. And on the journal side, there's been this stability that has been really crucial. Patty Baskin's been here through it all. Sharon Quimby has also been at the journal through it all. And now she's actually in more of a leadership role over on the audio side with us, for which we're grateful. And we've had many team members who work tirelessly on each of the unseen details for each episode too. And currently your small but truly mighty team on the production side includes Haley McNiff, Clayton Stansberry, and Andy Lucas. We also have a great group of clinicians, our senior contributors, and we've all come to know and recognize their voices. Several of them have actually come up through the longstanding relationship of the podcast with the resident and fellow section of the journal. So if you want to put a name to a voice, you can see the official list of our regular podcast contributors in the reviewer recognition listing the journal published at the end of 2021. Your deputy editor, Jeff Ratliff, and I are really grateful to be a part of this family, especially because all of these voices have made the distance between us seem so much shorter during the past couple of years. Heading into 2022, I want to thank you. We will continue to change, to meet your needs, to respond to your comments and your suggestions. But as always, the goal will stay the same, to bring practical, relevant neurology education to you around the world, wherever you are, for free. And the first small change we're making is in direct response to your feedback. Many of you have told us you love the podcast, but increasingly, you just don't have the time to get through our longer episodes in one session. Or sometimes you just want to focus on one topic or one particular segment, depending how busy you are that week or how long your commute is or how long your workout is. So starting this week, we're dividing the podcast into two individual interviews each week, one on Monday and one on Thursday. And we're going to aim to keep each episode less than 20 minutes. Sometimes probably it'll be even closer to 10 or 15 minutes if it's very succinct and to the point, but maybe we can go up to 20 minutes on a specific topic if it's really packed with valuable content. So this gives us the flexibility to air everything you want on each topic, sometimes shorter, maybe sometimes a little longer, but we won't have to make the cuts and edits we've had to make in the past where we feel like we're losing really valuable information. So just like with every adjustment or tweak we make, try it out with us for a month or two, and please let us know what you think. Either email us or, you know, send us a message over social media, however you want to get a hold with us. And here's hoping for a year full of great progress and more effective treatments for our patients. And rest assured, any new developments, anything important in neurology, we'll continue to bring it to you here on the podcast every week, now twice a week.
Hi, this is Jeff Ratliff with the Neurology Podcast at Thomas Jefferson University. Welcome to this week's featured article interview. In this interview, we're welcoming Michael Olasco, a researcher from Boston University Alzheimer's Disease Research Center and CTE Center. Michael and his colleagues published a paper in the January 4 issue of Neurology titled Association Between Antemortem Flare, White Matter Hyperintensities, and Neuropathology in Brain Donors Exposed to Repetitive Head Impacts. Longtime listeners will recall our prior interviews on the topics of CTE and neurologic sequelae of brain trauma. There's a neurology recall episode from September of 2017, which highlights a number of our interviews from the past, and a more recent recall episode from February of 2020, which also has another collection of interviews we've featured on this topic. In Michael's paper, he and his colleagues explored the associations between pre-mortem MRI, postmortem neuropathological findings, as well as assessments of functional activities and cognitive difficulties in a cohort of 75 brain donation patients with a history of repetitive head impact through sports or military service. Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
So, Michael, I mentioned you were using MRI data to explore consequences of repetitive head impacts. In January of 2020, I spoke with Charles Burnick about his paper using MRI to track cerebral volume loss in mixed martial arts fighters. And the MRI features you explored here were different and related to white matter intensities. Can you tell us, what did we already know about white matter imaging in patients with repetitive head trauma? And what were you hoping to add to that knowledge with this study?
Sure. So our work has really been studying the long-term effects of repetitive head impacts using post-mortem tissue. So the fact we're seeing these studies using clinical tools to detect pathology, we're really excited by that. And so getting back to your question, the short answer is we know very little. So far, the research has really focused on diffusion tensor imaging. It's a very sophisticated form of imaging, but unfortunately, it's not very clinically routine. Here, a flare MRI, that's very routine. We, as part of every dementia evaluation, you're getting that sequence. So we set out to ask the question, can we use this really practical, this really routine sequence to pick up on some of these pathologies we see in repetitive head injury? And that's something that hasn't been asked yet or answered yet. And so that's why we're quite excited by our findings.
Yeah. What can the MRI and specifically the aspects of white matter hyperintensities tell us about the neuropathologic consequences of repetitive head impacts based on the data you collected?
So when we think about repetitive head impacts, we've long kind of been looking at its association with risk for the neurodegenerative disease chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. But we're now seeing quite a bit of data that these injuries can lead to a number of different pathologies, including white matter degeneration. So actually, a couple of years ago, we looked at our brain bank, a sample of former American football players, and found that the more years of play correlated with more severe white matter rarefaction at autopsy. So what we're trying to do is, can we detect these white matter pathologies we're seeing in the tissue after death on this sequence? It seems like we might be able to, and it seems like it might be alluding to some of these things like demyelination, things like axonal loss, things like neuroinflammation. You know, but that's one of the issues here, is that these flares, they're relatively nonspecific, but it can capture a whole host of white matter pathologies that we might see in this setting.
And so you mentioned there that the higher volume of these white matter intense lesions, when you looked at the neuropathological data, you saw more severe white matter rarefaction, arterial sclerosis, and p-tau deposition in the paper. Does that allow us to draw any possible conclusions about the mechanism of injury that connects head trauma with the neurodegenerative changes that you're seeing on neuropathology?
I don't think we can draw definitive conclusions right now, but I do think it provides several suggestions. I actually think there's perhaps several parallel paths going on here. So one is that an individual is exposed to repetitive head impacts while playing contact sports, military service, physical violence, other sources. The white matter changes begin, and then with aging, they might persist over time, get worse, and contribute to thinking and memory problems. The other path is that these repetitive head impacts might lead to a neurodegenerative disease process, and perhaps these white matter changes are downstream from those neurodegenerative disease processes. And then I think, you know, an important point of this paper too is the association with arterial sclerosis or small vessel disease. I think that's also an independent path, regardless of repetitive head impacts. This type of pathology might be also quite common in this population and independently contribute to symptoms.
I got it. So it sounds like there could be a number of different mechanisms behind the sequelae of these head impacts, be it small vessel mediated or initial damage, or maybe triggering a more secondary progressive neurodegenerative process.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we can kind of tease apart those paths through this data, but definitely a target for future research.
Moving into some of the more functional and, again, anti-mortem data, or at least retrospective anti-mortem data, you also looked, and in this case, this data was collected retrospectively from informants who knew the decedents whose brains were in the cohort. You looked at anti-mortem measures of functional ability and cognitive difficulties. So again, using that data, What did the MRI potentially tell us about the possible functional and cognitive performance of patients who sustained these repetitive head impacts?
Yeah, I do think, you know, it's important to point out that a limitation of that data is using informant reports and collecting it retrospectively. That being said, we really have long known that these white matter hyperintensities contribute to symptoms in the setting of Alzheimer's disease or other neurodegenerative diseases. In 2021, the traumatic encephalopathy syndrome research diagnostic criteria were published, and this is the clinical syndrome of CTE neurology. The symptoms listed there are quite heterogeneous, and we are seeing that the reason that they might be so diverse is because there's multiple pathologies going on. So I think what this study raises is white matter degeneration accounting for or contributing for some of the symptoms we see in CTE or in people with repetitive head impact history?
And we talked about, you know, a T2 flare image is a, you know, highly utilized, very common study. And so we've already talked about one of the exciting things about these results is the progress or potential progress towards being able to make an assessment of patients with repetitive head trauma antemortem using imaging technology as available as MRI. So to take these findings into the clinic, maybe we see a patient who has a career in the military or contact sports who's presenting with neuropsychiatric symptoms, acknowledging what you just said, that these neuropsychiatric symptoms can really be myriad and cover a broad spectrum of different manifestations. Let's say an MRI of that patient's brain may show T2 intense lesions in the cerebral white matter. We recognize that these types of lesions are common, and often we attribute them to chronic microvascular disease that's associated with either aging or other vascular risk factors. What can these results teach us about the clinical utility, or maybe the hopeful future clinical utility of an MRI in the evaluation of a patient with this scenario?
Yeah, this is the part that definitely excites me. You know, we certainly can't take our findings into the clinic yet, but I think we're entertaining here is the use of flare and the use of evaluating white matter hyperintensities along with other diagnostic data points to capture long-term effects or repetitive head impacts. You know, I think this is a really timely question. And if I could, I'll offer a clinical vignette that I just encountered. This was an individual in his mid-50s, many, many years of exposure to repetitive head impacts. He had objective evidence of neuropsychological impairment. He was reporting quite a bit of symptoms. Absolutely no vascular risk factors, and then it was riddled with white matter hyperintensities. And these lesions, they weren't just the periventricular lesions, they were these deep kind of punctate lesions. It's also in the context of a negative amyloid biomarker as well. So you have to be wondering here in the pathologies, the absence of these other pathologies, are these white matter hyperintensities late effects of this individual's repetitive head impacts, and are they accounting for some of the symptoms? I think those are the things we have to entertain. Again, this will never be something you can look at on its own and make diagnostic conclusions, but I think we're at the point where it's quite thought-provoking, and with a little bit more research, maybe we'll get a better understanding of what exactly is causing them.
And it sounds like from your clinical vignette that your study looked a lot at the white matter lesion volume, but there certainly may be some other qualitative aspects of these patients' imaging. Where are the lesions, and is there a morphologic appearance on imaging that might give us a clue? Again, taking into account, like you said, absence of vascular risk factors to explain them, and other things like that. So it sounds like as the cohort of patients that your group and others are looking at gets bigger, hopefully we can collect more of this antemortem and real life clinical data that might give us more utility of imaging down the road.
Yeah, precisely. You know, with these lesions, you're never going to be able to rule out aging and vascular risk factor related causes, and just identifying how much of it's from that versus how much is from repetitive head impacts, or is there something different about their shape and repetitive head impacts will be really interesting questions moving forward.
Yeah, and it's really exciting. Thank you, Michael, for teaching us. Once again, I've been speaking with Michael Olasco about his paper, Association Between Antemortem Flare, White Matter Hyperintensities, and Neuropathology in Brain Donors Exposed to Repetitive Head Impacts, which is in the January 4th issue of Neurology. There's a lot more information in the paper than we've been able to cover here, so hopefully you all get a chance to read it. Thanks again, Michael.
Thanks, Jeff. This is great.
This is Jose Merino. Please check out this week's journal, which features a study investigating social demographic and medical predictors of incident mild cognitive impairment, as well as an article providing updated quality guidelines for the treatment of painful diabetic neuropathy. Thank you again for listening, and have a great week.
The views and opinions of the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the journal Neurology or the AAN. Disclosures of the participants are included in the show descriptions, reached by a link on the neurology.org website.